Welcome to the Fuller Chasing Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of September, and I'm recording at, let's see what it is, 9:53 p.m., and that is Greenwich Mean Time. And this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook, but first let's just have a quick look at what's actually happening, a quick discussion of what's actually happened here today, and also a little bit on the week. Well, you know, it's been emotional, choppy, and we saw some pretty heavy selling earlier in the week. Today was a day of steadying here overall. Among the Asia-Pacific region indices, most were higher. Japan had the best gains, up 1.75 on, or just better than that on average across its indices. The China A shares and, well, the mainland China indices were down a little bit here today, whereas the Hang Seng index and the H share index, they were a little bit higher today, Taiwan a fraction higher. Most of the remainder, the remainder of the indices were all up a little bit in the Asia-Pacific region. And, excuse me, I hope I don't have too much of a scratchy throat here this evening, but looking at the European markets, now we had some good gains. They were deeply oversold. Well, most markets are fairly deeply oversold on a short-term basis, but strong recoveries here, and they were also helped by Wall Street, which was pretty strong for most of the day. But the top gainer, well, we had some 3% plus gainers here. Top was the Italian market up 3.68%, the French market up 3.07%. Euro stocks 50 up 3.11, German DAX index up 2.77%. So it was a good day. Switzerland up 2.75. Wall Street started off with solid gains, which became very large gains, and that was the case around the time the European markets closed. So they were certainly benefiting from that. And then Wall Street fell back. Now, the Dow still closed higher by nearly 0.75 percentage point, but we had the tiniest of declines in the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ composite was down 1%, and that's because the biotechnology index, remember that had been the strongest performer by far, among those Wall Street indices, and well, it's finally succumbed to a little more of the, it had lost form, it had lost its uptrend consistency, but it fell sharply here today, so we're still getting some profit taking and choppy market conditions here overall. Now, elsewhere, the government bond index, bond yields had fallen earlier in the week, and they've been edging higher. The U.S. 10-year closed at 2.16, but it was up at 2.20 briefly when Wall Street was at its highs. And the VIX index edged up 23.62. Now the commodity indices. I should go into currencies here. Sorry. The dollar index, a little firmer here today, 96.13, and the euro is a little lower, a third of a point lower, it's at 1.1197, almost 1.12, and sterling is a little lower here, 1.5181. Australian dollar, quiet here, 0.7025. No big action that I've seen in the currency markets here today, but of course the real weak spot there has been the resources exporting economies, emerging markets that largely export resources. They've been absolutely hammered, as you know. And now, what we have also seen is that the commodity indices, generally, they were up for the second day in a row. Now, not huge moves, but they're very depressed, these markets. And at some point, we're going to have quite a significant recovery, and I'm sure the charts will be very helpful in seeing seeing the start of that. And let's see, we have today crude oil a little bit firmer here on both the Brent and the WTI. The grains and beans are stronger today. The industrial metals were a little bit firmer. And we've got palladium strong again. That's benefiting from the feeling that we'll see a move away from diesel engine cars. And the cars that run on gasoline, they use more platinum in their catalytic converters rather than sorry, they use more palladium in their catalytic converters rather than platinum, which is used in the diesel vehicles. So palladium, say, firmer here at 667 and change. Silver down 5 cents at 15.075. Platinum down $4.70 to 9.51. Gold down $7.50, 1146 here overall. Number of the agricultural commodities. I already mentioned the grains and beans, but I see also coffee's higher, white sugar, strong gain in white sugar. That's been quite bombed out, and I mentioned it yesterday that it rallied and it's picked up in here again today. Okay, so let's look a little further afield, a look over a longer time period. What's actually going on here? Well, of course, we're about to enter the final, next week we will enter the final week of this period of underperformance on average. And one does need to emphasize the on average, but certainly we've seen underperformance from May through September and by stock markets, and we still have October to go. And October is the month that probably again on average has frightened investors more than any other. We've had some frightening incidents in here in the last few weeks for sure, so maybe that's lowered that risk somewhat for October. But I'd expect it to be a little bit tricky. Investors' nerves are a bit fragile. We, of course, have seen that 10% plus correction on Wall Street with the S&P down about 12.5% here overall. And most leading indices in other countries are down considerably more. And that's always the case when you get these corrective phases. Wall Street almost always a bigger, more diversified market sees a smaller overall percentage move. Of course, there'll be plenty of big movers within the U.S. markets. But the indices are not quite so volatile, and it's been the commodity producers that have seen the biggest declines here among stock markets, and that's the main story here overall. But differences this time, which have added a little bit more nervousness and selling pressure, the instability around China. Again, China is a hard market, or the China economy. It's hard to be on top of what's actually going on there. It's hard for the Chinese to be on top of it, let alone those of us sitting in far removed parts of the world. And the mishandling of China's stock market. Well, you know all that. I've talked about it plenty. But that has certainly played on investors' nerves. And I think what we have to remember is that we know this analytically, but we lose sight of it in the heat of the battle here. But stock markets are volatile. They're pretty well, they've always been volatile. And yes, they get some persistent periods where they're just seeing one-way traffic to the upside or occasionally to the downside here, but they're very choppy. Money and people and money, I should say. It's a volatile combination here overall. A lot of leverage is used in the markets. And this causes far bigger moves in share prices than you see in any kind of change in underlying economic conditions for the most part. There are a lot of funds just running on high frequency trading activity, so based on computer programs rather than anything else, but causing some big money to swing around. And what they're trying to do is to latch on to and front run a panicky move to the upside, and best of all to the downside, as far as they are actually concerned. So we see a great deal of that, and then again, money in just these unit trusts, and if and a lot of these exchange traded funds. Now, if you get a little bit of nervous selling pressure, that can force managers into a self-feeding lowering of their overall investment position. So again, all adding to this big volatility in stock markets. Now, how bad is the background actually? Because people see sharp falls, and then you get some grim forecasts, and some very bearish people, and there are always some very bearish people around. They are thrust forward, or emboldened to step forward, and put out some alarming forecasts. It's all part of the game. You've seen it for a long time, but how bad is this situation in here today? Well, certainly there are some legitimate concerns over what's actually going on in China. I feel that some of the more knowledgeable and experienced people that I monitor are, for the most part, reasonably calm about China overall. And that makes sense to me. And this is a powerful economy. In the last 35 years, it's gone from being a very much of an underdeveloped, hardline communist nation into a command economy, which has grown spectacularly rapidly. And inevitably, that's going to lead to some volatility. There's an interesting shift in here, moving away from the heavy metal bashing exporting model into more of a consumer-oriented model. Well, that's not the easiest thing to engineer overall, but it's a positive move, and it's very necessary if China is to continue developing. And parts of China are really quite developed, and I would say that within 10 to 20 years, we will be saying that China is a fully developed economy. And again, it will have achieved that in record time here overall. So yeah, a little bit frightening. The command economy business, when it works well, looks like an absolute marvel. But there are a number of blunders, and we've seen a few of those in the last few months. So that remains a concern here overall. Deflation. I'm more relaxed about deflation than most people. There are some deflationary pressures. There always are following a big financial crisis, which we had in 2008. Get a lot of deleveraging coming from that. And that takes a long time to recover that. I've talked about that, saying a minimum of 5 or 6 years, and in the best of circumstances, because you get individuals deleveraging, you get corporations deleveraging, that lowers tax revenues, just slows everything down overall. And then if you have had one of the worst financial crises really since the 1930s, and it's been pretty much on a global basis, then it's going to take longer than that 5 or 6 years. Well, what are we, about just over 6.5 years? We still have this quite slow growth here overall. I don't think that's all that surprising. I don't think that's all that worrying here overall. I look at the background generally, and I think we've benefited, or economies have benefited, from having some sensible monetary policy for the most part. And I'm of the view that the quantitative easing that may have dragged out or lengthened the period of underperformance, but it avoided what I think what would have been a much, much more traumatic bust up back in that 2008, 2009 period. So where are we today? We still have accommodative monetary policies in all the major developed economies, and we clearly have the quantitative easing continuing in Europe, and also in Japan. China has its own version of QE that it's utilizing. And the rising interest rates haven't risen all that much, and they're mainly in some of the rather less well-managed commodity exporting countries, where their currencies have really taken a big hit, and that has led to a pickup in inflationary pressures. But those are the exceptions, not the rule, here overall. So I don't think the situation's all that bad. I don't expect Wall Street to go into some big bear market, but it certainly fulfilled the forecast that we would definitely see a 10%, or most likely see a 10% plus correction before the end of October, and that's already occurred. My expectation is that we'll see this nervousness continue in October, but probably with more stock markets improving rather than deteriorating. I don't say that with a high level of confidence. But what I do say with a little bit more confidence is that I don't think that we'll see anything really, really significant to the downside beyond what we have already seen. In other words, I think the worst of this is over. Now, for several months, for most of this year, and I've been talking about we would see a choppy environment that would produce lots of well, would produce several corrections, and within those several corrections over the next few years, that we would see some cyclical bear markets, and that's already occurred. I think we'll have a somewhat choppy environment. It could last another 2 or 3 years. But then thereafter, I think we will see global GDP growth picking up, and that's no change in my long-term forecast. I've been really saying that for several years. Well, why would that global GDP growth be picking up? Because and it would be doing so because economies would be emerging from this environment of heavy deleveraging that we've actually seen, and we would therefore see more of a normalization of monetary conditions that leads to some choppiness in its own right. But we should see global GDP growth improving somewhat, just as we've seen on a choppy basis in the USA. And we've seen an improvement certainly in the European region. And I think that will spread really more widely, probably with the commodity producers being the last to actually participate in that overall economic recovery. But participate they will. I think there's no reason not to be optimistic about that. And again, just to emphasize this point, the general background is a positive monetary condition. And I usually you get the more serious lasting pullbacks when central banks are really fighting inflation and tightening monetary conditions. And that's clearly not the case here or in other countries for the most part. And then other well, again, we look at that background. What's good here? The low interest rates, the positive monetary conditions, those are favorable for investors overall. I've said that following sharp corrections such as we've seen, that's a very good time to be accumulating shares that you actually like. And I know it's sometimes stressful to do that, but the best time to sell is always when markets are doing extremely well and accelerating relative to their rising 200-day moving averages. And it's always the best time to buy after there's been a little bit of blood in the streets. And veteran subscribers will have heard me say that on many occasions, and I think that's they're basic truisms here. So this is a better time to buy than to be selling. And as I've said before, I would do it on an incremental basis rather than plunging in aggressively, and I'd keep the leveraged positions relatively small if you and you don't really need to have any of those in all probability. Okay, looking further down the road, what will we actually see? Well, the most interesting story of this era, in my opinion, and you will know this, is the accelerating rate of technological innovation. Now, that has been a major factor keeping inflation lower. There are other factors keeping inflation down, such as that I mentioned earlier, the deleveraging that we had seen. Global competition certainly has kept kept in inflation downwards, but the technological innovation provides a positive disinflation, and the big beneficiaries, or the biggest beneficiaries, I would say, of the technological innovation are the corporations that are at the forefront of these technological developments. And that's going to be the case for certainly the rest of my lifetime, and probably for the rest of your lifetime as well. This can go on and on, and I suspect it will. And you just think how much more efficient and effective technology has made many companies. It also creates a more rapid level of obsolescence for companies that fall behind, so we have to watch out for that overall. It takes a little while to get used to it. For instance, a given example is I go through this quickly because I have mentioned it on other occasions. But commodity producers, take the miners. The miners have been major beneficiaries of the accelerated rate of technological innovation. Their ability to pinpoint rich seams in mines, their ability to extract on a much more efficient basis. I mean, really, the top mining operations could all be done virtually by machine. And so they can produce much, much more efficiently and effectively at a lower cost basis. But of course, they get carried away and produce too much, and then prices fall substantially, and then they find that they're in a more difficult position and balance sheets are being pressured. It's a classic cycle. We see this in mining sectors. Well, I've seen it every cycle, every economic cycle in my adult life, and they were going on beforehand as well, or at earlier times as well. So we're getting a replay of that, and exacerbated somewhat by the technological advantages that enable a Rio Tinto or a BHP Billiton to drive smaller companies out of business. It's not nice, but that's the way, that's the competitive capitalistic system in here. And if they play it right, the benefits are huge. There are also risks. Obviously, you can be driving other people out of business and weaken your own balance sheet. And we've seen that with some of the big miners here overall. But that's the end of that digression here. Technological developments are going to remain among the most exciting things that happen in the global economy. And that will cause some problems because technology can replace jobs and is replacing jobs more quickly than those jobs are replaced. And that affects white collar jobs every bit as much as blue collar jobs. But over time, we do find more jobs for people, and we could see that's happened in the United States, it's happened in the UK, and I think that will remain the case overall. Other factors that are certainly very important. We have a rapidly growing middle class, and that's certainly good for business. It's good for GDP growth over the longer term. The big autonomies, these big multinational companies, they benefit the most from that, and continue to do so. It's a very exciting story here overall. And also that what I've seen in my lifetime, we have not only much bigger global middle class, much more of the world is operated on a capitalist model. Of course, when you get periods of economic recession and underperformance, and people come along and they always want to bring socialism back into the system. And well, it's understandable why that actually happens. It seems very caring and sharing, but really it's all about redistribution rather than the creation of wealth. And I think it's the creation of wealth that improves the lot of most people over the longer term. So I'm not a supporter of Corbynomics here, here overall. I think a benevolent capitalistic system is hard to beat, and I suspect most of you agree with me on that point. And I think I've pretty much covered the bases in here. Foods, I haven't touched on those, but a lot of that depends on the weather, which has been not that bad. Do we have global warming? Well, I could bore people for a long time on that, and I'm certainly not going to do so, but most people feel that it is a factor. It is a bit of a concern. It's probably good for crops more than it's bad for crops overall. And it creates more moisture, warmer conditions for growing. And I think we see that reflected in some of the agricultural crops, which also benefit from technology. And on that note, if you're a rugby fan, it's going to be a great weekend and more in the weeks ahead. Again, tomorrow, some interesting, challenging matches. So enjoy your weekend, and all the very best to all of you, and I look forward to seeing some of you at the markets now on Monday. Take care.